My topic within the America in Decline question is, of course, the Middle East and Islam. And I'm glad to hear that Bill acknowledges that the Islamist threat is the most current. And I, in return, will be happy to grant that the Chinese threat is the greatest long-term one. So we have peace and harmony on the panel. Let me start by looking at American politics. It seems to me that there is a profound difference between liberals and conservatives and Democrats and Republicans on such questions as economics, the culture, counterterrorism, and Islam and Middle East policy. And I don't know which way this country is going. I look at 2008, and I see roughly 53-47 split in favor of the Democrats, and look 2 weeks ago, and it's roughly the same split in favor of the Republicans. 6% of the people changed their mind, as it were, and 47% on either side didn't change their mind. So, you know, one out of 19 people changed their minds. And it's unpredictable. It's a very small slice of the American electorate, and I have no idea whether we're going to have a Republican future or a Democratic future at this point. My assignment is in two parts, to look at the geopolitical threats coming from the Middle East and Islam, such as Turkey and Iran on the one hand, and non-state actors, jihad and terrorism on the other, and then secondly, look at American responses. So to begin with the threats, there are many threats coming out of this, out of my portfolio. Let me mention three in particular. The first is Islamism. Islamism is the only live, radical utopian movement in the world today. It is the third historic such movement after fascism and communism. We dispatched the first two, one through a giant war with tens of millions of deaths and a victory through blood and steel. The second through the Cold War, which, though it had its certainly violent aspects, ended in the fizzle, the implosion of the Soviet Union, and no violence to speak of at all. And here we have the bookmarks of how, the bookends of how the United States wins wars. And somewhere in between, I hope, we will find a victory over the Islamists. But this is the ideological threat of the present, that China is not an ideological threat. China is not an idea. Maoism is no longer alive. It is something quite different. And no one else has an idea that threatens civilization as does radical Islam. There are two variants of radical Islam. There is the better known violent version, terroristic, criminal, that kills people, blows them up. But however dangerous, and it could be far more dangerous than it has been, I mean, consider 3000 and 9/11 as the worst versus World War II. There's no comparison. The numbers of deaths are quite trivial. There's a website called Religion of Peace, thereligionofpeace.com, that totals something like 16,000 deaths since 9/11. Well, that's a significant number, to be sure, but again, very negligible by historic standards. There's that method, but I don't see, and it could be much larger, the number of deaths, I don't see how this is a path to victory. I don't see how killing people will win, because when it comes to warfare, we predominate. Surely the Islamists don't think that they can use force to get to victory. Far more threatening to me, not on the level of blowing people up, but on the level of succeeding to apply the Islamic law, far more threatening to me is working through the system. And the contrast internationally would be between bin Laden on the one hand, violence, 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 and on the other hand, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the Prime Minister of Turkey, head, legitimate, popularly elected head of a powerful, well-situated, economically dynamic country. Who would you rather be, bin Laden or Erdogan? Which movement would you rather be commanding? Erdogan has already succeeded. One can see, again, two branches of this. There's the majority Muslim countries, such as Turkey, and then there's the West. In the West, how is Islamism going to, in the United States in particular, how is it going to develop? Through bombs and killings? Think of, say, back to the 2002 Capitol snipers, the Washington snipers. I mean, they killed people, they terrorized Washington, they, to some extent, shut it down. But so what? I mean, what in the long term is this going to achieve? Versus the insidious appeal and growth of Islamism in schools, and the media, law courts, and political arena. I think it's very important to focus on the second as well as the first. So that's one, Islamism is the first threat. The second would be non-conventional warfare. As you know, warfare is generally divided into three: weapons of mass destruction, conventional, and terrorism and related forms of violence. Traditional warfare is conventional: tanks, planes, and ships. We predominate there. Paul Kennedy was mentioned a couple of times. That Financial Times article from nearly a decade ago, it was remarkable. I mean, this power of the United States in the conventional level is extraordinary, and that we're doing research in areas such as stealth technology that no one else approaches us on. And therefore, with the exception of fools like Saddam Hussein, no one takes us on in the conventional arena. Not a good idea. We can overpower quickly our enemies. So our enemies have gone to two other levels, the WMD and the low-intensity warfare. WMD, in my area, obviously is Iran, but not just Iran. The Syrians are building chemical weapons and many, many others. And on the level of the low end, the terrorist, you have not just the obvious terrorists, but, for example, you have the Somali pirates who have altered the nature of seafaring commerce in recent years. The third area I'd like to point out, which is really not noticed in general, is anarchy. The Middle East is known for dictatorships. Saddam Hussein would be the best example, but Hafez al-Assad, Hosni Mubarak, and many, many others. The kings, the presidents, and the emirs dominate. There's almost no democracy other than Israel and Turkey. I say almost because one has forms of democracy here and there. But this is an autocratic region, but at the same time, it's an anarchic region, which in some ways is more dangerous. I mentioned Somalia before. Somalia is a dangerous place. We have Americans and other Westerners going to Somalia. We have terrorism coming out of Somalia. Lebanon, Iraq, Afghanistan, Yemen. Americans have never thought about Yemen. Now we have Yemen as a significant place of concern to Americans. And there are other places, larger, more worse from our perspective, possibilities of anarchy. Egypt, after Mubarak passes from the scene, it could be his son, the dynasty. It could be the army, which is the historic, since 1952, keeper of the government's power. Or it could be the Islamists in rebellion. You could have a tripartite anarchy. Who knows? Pakistan. Pakistan is not anarchic yet, but it could become quite easily. So Islamism, WMD, and terrorism, and anarchy are three of the major threats coming out of my portfolio. Finally, responses. And I'd like to note that two very important responses to warfare took place in 1945. First, there was nation building. Germany, Austria, Italy, Japan, and other countries. Unlike any other conquering power in history, the United States did not plunder its defeated foes, as, say, the French and British had done just 25, 27 years earlier. But we helped them. We funded them. We put them back on their feet. We rehabilitated them. We wrote constitutions for them. We kept our soldiers there for a good while, and we apprenticed. We showed them how to enter into modern life with extraordinary success. And because the success was so extraordinary in 1945, this has become our default response. And we just do it automatically. There was a novel and movie in the 1950s called The Mouse That Roared that took off on this theme, that all you have to do is declare war on the United States. If you've got troubles, as this make-believe Duchy of Fenwick had troubles with their wine industry, you declare war on the United States, and then you get funded by the United States. And because it's a Peter Sellers movie, the Duchy of Fenwick won against the United States, and everything went awry. But this is our default, and we did it in Nicaragua, and we did it in Kuwait, and we did it in, to a certain extent, Kuwait. We certainly did in Afghanistan and Iraq. Well, that's a failure. That's a failure. The circumstances of 1945 do not obtain today, and there are many things that are different. And as a result, I believe, and I say this with sadness, our $1 trillion and nearly 5,000 lives in Iraq and roughly a third that amount in Afghanistan, are wasted, are doomed, will not succeed. I cannot see how any of the vectors that are taking place today pointing in the right direction. Nation building is not working. But there was another response to 1945, which was containment and deterrence, the Soviet Union. We didn't try and roll back. We didn't try and usurp the government in Moscow. What essentially we sent to the Soviets was, you can do what you want to each other, but leave us alone. And it worked. It took a long time, and there was a lot of pain, but deterrence and containment did work. We protected ourselves rather than fix the world. I believe that is the policy we should adopt vis-a-vis the extraordinarily difficult, anarchic, Islamist, autocratic governments and movements, peoples of the Middle East and the Muslim world. We should defend ourselves rather than try and fix them as we try to do in Iraq and Afghanistan. We should learn from our treatment of the current enemy, the Soviet Union in those days, rather than our defeated enemies, Germany and Japan. We learned from 1945, I think, the wrong lesson. So returning finally to US policy today, I think that George W. Bush was too ambitious, tried to do something that we can't achieve, and Barack Obama is too weak, not trying to do what we can do, not protect us. We need someone who gets it right, and therefore I, like you, will be spending my next year or so scouring the Republican candidates to see who gets it right.